they are trying to open the market in Latin America, and they saw this project in Arequipa as one very important opportunity. So we are expecting to have investors, private investors, for the buses and for the fare system in the city. We have heard from buses providers, for instance, Mercedes, Volvo, that they have very keen interest in this project.
I can see the attraction of selling people, you know, vehicles. That's obvious opportunity, and even maybe the construction of the actual network. Is that the main thing they're going to do? What about the maintenance of the network? Do they see that as a revenue stream that would make it sustainable or not?
No, we are thinking about the fare. Everything that is related with the network, with infrastructure, has to be provided by the city. Otherwise, the system is not going to be sustainable. One of the main problems we are facing in this particular project is the fare. The fare is really too low. And if we do not provide a fare that really meets the economic affordability of the people, then we are going to have these bans back in the city. So we are talking about 20 cents of dollar per fare, and it is really low. We are like walking on the edge, talking even about a subsidy from the local government.
So it seems to me that the underlying idea, if I understand correctly, is in the case of North America, to discourage people to touch their cars already and move them to public transit. I mean, in your case, Claudia, if I'm not mistaken, I cannot say discourage, but not encourage people to use, to buy new cars, if we can. Are these goals realistic? Can we, are we optimistic? You work on this a lot, Larry. Do you think that the mindset is still associated and coupled to the car, and we will see people moving there into public transit, or it's a lost cause, a lost battle? And how we get there? How can we convince people to get there?
But
short question, then Dan, Mr. Beck. Yeah.
There's three sets of, I see, decisions, decision-making context. One is the development process. And I think we can intervene. It's up to whether or not there's the political will in government to change the playing field. Right now, people are making perfectly rational decisions given the reward structure that's in place, isn't that? I mean, so if you want to change where development goes and how it's designed, and then the next set of decision makers is us, is where to live. So you choose where to live, and if your choice where to live is within a context where there's better choices to allow you to pick a place that you might prefer, that actually has the kind of housing that you're providing in London that no one was providing before because it was a place in the market that was empty. And then once you live in a place, then you make travel choices. So you've got these interlocking sets of decision-making functions that government impacts, and your project shows an example where you might change the trade-offs. So yeah, as long as we don't change the rules, nothing's going to change.
So we need to change a little comment here, and then Claudia, then we can. Yes, please. You want to?
I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Daniel Baker. I'm coming from Rio, and I apologize not having been with you yesterday because I was a little jet lagged, and I thought the dinner was today.
We missed your comment.
Just wanted to comment on your statement. Is that in our reality, we have to, when we look below the equator, we have a totally different view. I think Claudia is very much aware of that. In Brazil, for example, in my city, Rio, we have the new area of the city where everybody wants to live. It's like the old Miami. In Miami of scattered, low-density condominiums where people want to live because there is a security issue. The city. So when you go to the ideal neighborhoods in North America, those neighborhoods that mixes townhouses and houses and commerce and schools, those are considered unsafe because they are too open. So people want to live in closed compounds and so on. And this model of urbanism is completely over. But it's still the dream of people in South America. It's still the dream of South America to have a car.
The low density still holds.
It still holds, and holds in a very bad way because there are other factors that influence people's decision making, and they don't even realize that these neighborhoods, the style of urbanism, is bad for their health and bad for the city in general.
Claudia, Vikram, and then Tia, please come.
Yeah, I think Daniel is very right. In the movement, for instance, and I'm really glad I can tell about that, because in my whole life I haven't been able to say that my country is doing well economics-wise. Right now, the people that are getting a little bit more money, they cannot still afford a house, but they can right now afford a car, and they are buying a lot of cars. So the car industry in Peru is very pleased, is very happy, because they have a lot of people that, of course, hate to use public transportation. And one of the advertisements after the summer was, have you had enough of traveling in these little buses? Well, we can offer you a $10,000 car. Just come and buy it.
And I believe that this is the Nano, the Tata that is coming in India, similar to what is happening today with bicycle. This is even cheaper.
Well, right. So the challenge that we have...
$2,000.
Yeah. The challenge that we have in developing countries is how to provide really good public transportation and affordable public transportation for keeping the people using this and walking or biking.
I'm just trying to work out some numbers here. You say investment of $85 million. Mm-hmm. $2,000 for a nano. That means I have 42,000 cars. If I were to give mopeds, I can give out almost 85,000 or 100,000 mopeds for that price, which means for every second household, there is a private transport which is now available. So the price versus kind of why people are going to... I'm just talking of public investment going in this versus as a citizen, if I were to make a choice. We are facing a very stiff competition from personal mobility devices. And I'm a bit surprised. The number of taxis I see there is some kind of dumping going on there.
In what sense?
They're not made, all the automobiles are not made there.
No, they are imported.
The vehicles are showing up there when they're
so there is a whole other side to the business which we are not seeing.
Yeah, this is complicated. So.
Yeah. Here. Then Don.
Just to follow on what Vikram was saying about choice and the competition with choice, all of us have a need to travel. The fact is that I want to get from home to, say, when I'm living in London, I'm living at home in London, and I want to take the tube, say, to the centre of town, which is Bank Station. I can cycle there faster than a taxi. I have two bicycles. Or I can take the bus, or I can take the tube. I can take a taxi, which costs a lot more, and do I really want to spend that much money? No. I might take a taxi once in a while, because I'm getting late for a really big do, and it's worth it. Now, coming back to transport, we talked about New Delhi having a new metro system, Dubai is going to have a new metro system, they've got new buses. In the Middle East, for example, it's very difficult for them to get out of this mindset of having just one car, per se, because of pollution within the city or anything, because it's a status thing. You know, within a city, say for example in Doha, you'll have about four or five cars, not just one. And in fact, each and every single individual within that household will have a car and a driver. So instead of having one car per family, it's one car per person in the family. Then I wanted to talk about how in Japan, whilst I was in Japan, you know, there's no shame in shoving you inside this mass transport system called the metro system, Chikatetsu, where, you know, you've got people with white gloves on who will come and literally you stand backwards and they push you in and you're like sardines in a can. This is how people transport themselves. I was in Syria about 2 months ago and I travelled in taxi. It cost me $10 to get from Jordan to Syria, from Amman to Damascus. And from there we went into a bus to get to a monastery. And it was very, very cheap. This transport and being packed into these really small buses, it was cost effective for me. So why do I, when I have a choice of either taking one of these £10 taxis, do I take the plane? Right. Why do I then change my mode or standard of living according to that infrastructural need? So when we were talking about how is it that these infrastructural projects really benefit the individual, I'd like to know what your answer is.
Let me, 1 second, Donny wanted to say something.
Just a question for Larry and maybe others in the room. And this question might overlap a little bit between the work our group is doing and the health in the workplace group. I expect most of us in this room work in terms of design solutions, whether it's land use or infrastructure systems. But I'm just wondering, Larry, in your work, have you encountered attempts at solutions going through the business community, through employers, to change travel to work behaviors, that sort of, how do we operationalize the systems we already have?
Great. There's a lot of work in the U.S. and some in Canada on employer-based incentives for travel to work. And in fact, we have a paper showing the effect of providing a bus pass and promoting physical activity. One of the best things you can do to promote physical activity as an employer is provide your employees with a bus pass, because then if you provide enough of an incentive, and cashing out of parking is one that's been well studied in the U.S. too, where you can give your employee the cost that as an employer you would have had to pay for the employee's parking as salary, where you can cash them out and give them that as part of their pay. These things are actually shown to have an effect, and we've measured the change in not only travel, but the likelihood of getting physical activity benefits from these transportation incentives to use transit. Yeah, so, I mean, it's just never typically measured that way, but in the same type of data that we have for travel, we also look at walking and physical activity people get through their daily travel, and we've correlated that with the bus pass incentive, the transit pass. Universities have been the most successful in providing bus passes and have shown an amazing, at University of British Columbia, we've had a more than doubling of transit ridership when the introduction of the pass. And so there are certain markets out there. And finally, I wanted to say that I think the presentation was fantastic. And one of the things that I think isn't there on the benefit side, if you just divide the cost of the 85 million for that amount of transit is an amazingly low number. And we think of that here. Now there, it's still relative, but the issue is that there are an enormous. You couldn't fit on the road 40,000 more mopeds or that many more cars. So the issue is that it's not a the option. The alternative is not an alternative. It's not an option. So that's what your challenge is the only option.
Please? I'd like also to add to your, and I want to hear your comment.
Cost it out.
Should mayors be benevolent dictators? In other words, should they really impose their will, or shall we let the market flow? So if you can add, I want to hear your opinion about that.
Well, that's interesting. Attachment to what I wanted to comment on, which is our Brazilian friends pointing out that in order for anything that we're speaking about to work, you have to have the first establishment of good or of some kind of urban management and governance. And so we always talk about that there are three tools: design, policy, and management. We've been talking about design and policy. And the first steps of management are keeping a place and the population clean and safe. And until you can do that, then transit, the development patterns, everything that we've talked about in the first part of the morning, don't play a role. And in fact, so that does bring up the issue of the mayor or the government in establishing the management performance of a place so that you could even keep a lane open for that bus once you've paid for it, or make people feel, allow people to feel that they will be safe using any kind of public transportation. So that's not perhaps the role of this group to speak about, but
yes.
It is the old 19th century clean. We take that for granted, maybe in most places, maybe not. We'll be hearing about water issues later. But safety is a very important.
It seems to me that things are getting out of control. Danny, last comment, and then we will have a little movie that was prepared, if it will work.
Yes, the video is ready, and we'll do it during break.
So comment, last comment.
Just one on your question.
Yes.
If mayors should be like
dictators,
or should let the market act
yes.
by itself? This is a perspective that these two choices, I think they illuminate a little bit our vision on, let's say, a more of a northern vision, because in the southern hemisphere, politics, municipal politics, for example, are not driven by the city needs. They're driven by private agendas. They're driven by the promiscuity between big market developers or the owners of money and the politicians. So the community is excluded. The real city needs are out of the equation. This is the main point in the South. How to include the community in those kind of decisions.
First discussion and then plans. Include the community, engage the community. Yes, Claudio, last comment then.
I think if we are going to allow the market to regulate its stuff, then we have to be really fair about how much is the cost to have a car and put on this car all the externalities. For instance, the long life injury of a person that the state has to take care of after a car accident. You have to add in the cost of the car. So at the end, we will not have any car with $10,000, but cars above $50,000 or $70,000. Yeah. If there is people that can afford that, wonderful. But we are going to have all this money for the externalities that they are going to put on the city.
Yes. So there need to be balance and compensation for other things that happen. So we are sort of breaking now into... first we watch the movie and we will break into our first coffee break and we will convene here at 10:45, kindly be on time for presentation by Mr. Wong.